Today is the 12th of August, 2008. And we have at hand another lunar eclipse, or another eclipse. We just had an eclipse on the 1st of August, and we had a total solar eclipse on the 16th, which is Saturday. We will have a partial lunar eclipse. Typically we have about 4 eclipses per year, generally. This will be the last eclipse of 2008, coming up on Saturday, a short 2 weeks after the solar comes the lunar. And so let's talk about that a little bit. The moon will be edging forward in the first few minutes of the sign of Aquarius. Eclipsing the moon will be the north node, or dragon's head, which we call Rahu. And Rahu will be in the latter degrees of Capricorn. So this one sort of spans.
They always eclipsed by Rahu.
Last time it was.
eclipsed by Ketu, too.
Yeah, Rahu or Ketu. Who was it last time?
Rahu.
Well, it might have been, yeah. So, No, it wasn't. It was K2. No, 2 weeks ago it was K2. So if this is Capricorn and this is Aquarius, yeah? So the Rahu's here, tail end of Capricorn, and the moon's going like this during the eclipse, and it's crossing over. It'll be right in the first part of Aquarius. But this section here is 13 degree 20 minutes of a single constellation called the Nishta. Okay, so it does span a couple of signs into one.
Does it have more of an impact on the two rather than one?
Not necessarily, but the eclipse will occur in the constellation of the Nishta according to Vedic astrological calculation. The Nishta is a constellation that generally brings danger and disturbance, and its ruler is Mars. Constellations are divided into 3 categories, if you remember, which are Deva, Nara, Rakshasa. 27 constellations in the sky. 9 are Deva, 9 are Nara, 9 are Rakshasa. Do you remember what those words are? Anybody? Hi, Sinead.
Yes. Deva are gods.
Deva, godly. More enlightened, more evolved. Nara, human. Average evolution. And Rakshasa constellations, devils, demons, demoniac, or less evolved. And they're not always full-blown demons by any stretch. The Deva would be concerned with the welfare of all, the godly one. The humans are concerned with their own welfare and that of their immediate families. Yeah. And the demons, or materialists, or whatever you want to call them, are concerned with their own welfare, but they use threats and intimidation to achieve their ends. So that's the difference between the demons and the humans. So the Nishta is a Rakshasa constellation ruled by Mars, so it's a mischief maker. Rakshasa would be the demon. The time of greatest eclipse will be 10:10 p.m. Irish time or London time on Saturday. 10:10 p.m. if the sky is clear, you will see it. You will see the partial lunar eclipse, indeed. It will go from roughly 7:30 p.m. Daylight savings time we are on now, so I've made this calculation with that in mind, till 1 a.m. Okay. The greatest time of eclipse is 10:10 p.m. 10:10 Saturday night. Partying is not the answer during the eclipse. And I hate to spoil your plans here, because the best thing to do is meditation, prayer, mantra during an eclipse to help to neutralize the negative effect. An eclipse, if you heard this 2 weeks ago, you'll forgive me. An eclipse is generally an inauspicious event, since the planets, which are the luminaries, the givers of light, meaning sun or moon, are overshadowed or eclipsed by other celestial bodies. In Vedic mythology and astrological calculation, we always find the presence of either lunar node, Rahu or Ketu, dragon's head or dragon's tail, in conjunction with the eclipsed planet. So, like that.
How does that affect it, say, if it's a double pattern of Rahu, as after Ketu, if it's not double Rahu period, then the eclipse is...
If you're in the period...
If the eclipse is within Rahu, then...
It's not so much if you're in the period, it's more if you have planets in Capricorn or Aquarius in your birth chart. That's how it affects you. Rahu and Ketu are known as Chaya Graha, shadow planets, in Sanskrit, which means shadow planets, since their purpose is to carry and project the shadow upon the other planets. This they accomplish both on the personal or individual level and the collective or world level. Rahu and Ketu uncover the nature of the shadow or negative behavior pattern and its consequences so that it can be recognized, exposed to the light of day, and subsequently resolved or removed. This is the purpose. Is to bring something to the surface that needs to be addressed, needs to be dealt with, and not always stuffed down. So that's what the eclipse will do. It will call attention to an injustice, an illusion, a bewilderment, mistreatment, imbalance, so that it forces the hand, and it will have to be dealt with. Eclipse effects may be felt during the actual time of the eclipse, but they also reverberate for months to come. Usually sun's effects reverberate for months to come. Eclipse moon usually is for weeks to come.
Okay, is this eclipse moon or eclipse sun?
Partial lunar eclipse. Yeah. Saturday night, 10:10 p.m. Some of the effects that may become apparent in the near future with this particular eclipse are as follows. The price of materials produced through mining will increase, such as gold, coal, and natural gas. The cost of iron and steel production is likely to rise. Building contractors will lose money on their investments and developments. Pretty much anybody could predict that one. The price of agricultural products such as grain, vegetables, fruits, and tea will continue to escalate. Some countries may even begin a program of rationing certain foods and basic necessities. So stay tuned. There may be another outbreak of mad cow disease due to unsanitary conditions at a slaughterhouse. The effect here, or E. coli, or salmonella. Watch and see. You see, but this is this constellation, Dhanishta, rules slaughterhouses.
This next one.
So we're looking for some problem caused directly related to slaughtering of the animals and the means that they do it.
The boy, they had to take away some of their ham, or they couldn't supply ham anymore.
Subway sandwich shop? There may be a scandal at a newspaper or television network whose intent is to harm a political candidate instead of merely reporting the news. And finally, the cost of electricity will also escalate. Well, that has already been predicted by ESB. So that's kind of a no-brainer. What to do during an eclipse? In Vedic times, many thousands of years ago, it was the custom to enter a river, particularly a sacred river such as the Ganges, or the ocean, or other body of water, and chant mantras. How far do they usually enter it? Up to their waists or their thighs, somewhere up that deep. You could enter up to your ankles if you like. and chant mantras and offer prayers for purification for the duration of the eclipse. Solar and lunar eclipses are generally very inauspicious, with certain rare exceptions. I've never heard of the exceptions, mind you. It is nonetheless an advantageous opportunity for fasting, prayer, and meditation on God. Fasting should be observed for the whole period of the eclipse in order to... It's only a few hours.
From 7:10 p.m.
to 1 a.m.
Okay.
Yeah. 7:20. I think I said 7:30. Fasting should be observed the entire period of the eclipse in order to nullify the reactions of past negative, that is, egocentric activities. Bad karma. It is also recommended to give in charity to the poor as much as possible during the time of a lunar or solar eclipse. If you cannot afford to give in charity, then simply give charity within your mind. That is, envision yourself doing it just the way you would on the physical plane. Do it in your meditation. The spiritual benefit for you will be less, the same, or more. The same. Same benefit. Pregnant women should never look at an eclipse, since it is thought to have a potentially negative effect on the health of the fetus. If you have planets or your ascendant in Capricorn or Aquarius in your Vedic birth chart, you can counteract some of the negative effects of the eclipse by chanting the following mantras to Rahu and or the moon. For Rahu, you chant Om Shri Rahave Namaha. Om Shri Rahave Namaha. Om Shri Rahave Namaha. Om Shri Rahave Namaha. So that you chant to Rahu. If you're in a Rahu period, that's a good one to chant. And then, for the moon, Om Shri Chandraya Namaha. 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 So the moon's name is Chandra. Kind of everybody knows that, don't they? Okay. This is a short. I'll read it. Here's the legend of the story behind it. Thousands of years ago, the demons and the gods were instructed by Vishnu, or God himself, to churn the ocean of milk at the base of the universe in order to generate the sacred soma, the nectar of immortality. When the nectar of immortality was produced, the problem was to distribute it between the gods and the demons. To give it to the demons would mean to give infinite strength to those who would use it with poor judgment or from a limited egotistical perspective. To remedy the situation, Vishnu took the form of a beautiful damsel named Mohini, the bewilderer. This is the only known feminine incarnation of Vishnu. But believe you me, she was awesome. And told the demons to arrange themselves in a row in order to be served their share of the nectar. In preparation for the intense experience of drinking the nectar, Mohini asked the demons to close their eyes and meditate. That's not something the demons would like to do with any regularity. If anyone opened his eyes, he would lose his chance to share the nectar due to his impatience. That's what she told them. The materialistic and self-involved demons waited and waited. In the meantime, Mohini distributed the nectar only to the gods. Now, there's another version of this story where she distributes all the nectar to the gods. Then she picks up another pot and walks over to the demons and says, "Okay, open your eyes, here's your share," and distributes liquor, alcohol, to the demons. A bit of a similar effect, but it's a little bit different. Yeah, it's not quite the same. So, it is generally a female divinity, a virgin, who protects and bestows divine knowledge or revelation to lower beings. Is it not? How many stories have you heard like this?
Like?
Vestal virgins, like Saraswati. Any other examples?
Virgin Mary.
If you believe that. Mohini tried to teach the demons that one should not strive for physical immortality and its benefits, but for the supreme knowledge that transcends all material enjoyment and sensory perception. So the demons would use the nectar of immortality to increase their sense enjoyment down here on earth, or in the material world. And the gods would use it to increase consciousness, theoretically. The demon Rahu, who is thought to be a serpent-like character, had no intention of cooperating with Mohini's plan, and therefore he hid himself in the row amidst the gods. Directly between which two gods? The sun and the moon. The sun god passed the jug of nectar over to him. He took a drink. At that time, the sun and the moon looked and said, "Wait a second, that's Rahu, the demon. What's he doing drinking the nectar? What's he doing in our row?" At that moment, Mohini turned around, looked, and saw it was a demon. Vishnu has the Sudarshan Chakra, and it's a weapon. Cuts off the head, and she threw the chakra. It cut off Rahu's head. But the nectar had gone down as far as his throat, so the head became immortal. And the tail fell off. The tail was Ketu. So The nectar had gone only as far as his throat, so when Mohini threw a discus, severing his head from his body, he became immortal like the other gods. Rahu went on to perpetually eclipse the sun and the moon as payback for their treachery toward him.
How is Ketu alive, though? If Ketu is his tail, it's very like Harry Potter.
Well, this would be, this would predate Harry Potter by a few thousand years. Ketu is considered to be the tail of the serpent, and Rahu and Ketu are always 180 degrees apart in the sky. Alright. So that's what's happening Saturday night, in case you're wondering. I was going to talk briefly just for a couple minutes about the three energies. There are three energies in creation, be it the material creation or the spiritual creation. There are three tattvas. Tattva, do you know this Sanskrit word, what it means? Means truth or reality. Tattva or tattva. There is Vishnu tattva, Jiva tattva, and Mahat tattva. Vishnu tattva is what?
God.
It's the topmost divine energy. It is God. And God in all the pure God manifestations or incarnations. Jiva is what?
Human?
Well, it's human, but it's living entities.
Oh.
All living entities.
Oh, trees and...
trees, flies, bugs, fish, fowl. Yeah. Well, no, they can be in the heavenly worlds and the hellish worlds, all being in the material sphere. Any of these beings can be demigods. Jiva means soul or spirit, individual soul, individual spirit. We are Jiva. All of us here. The third one is Mahat Tattva. Matter. This is matter. This is a floor. This is a carpet. There's a pillow. There's a bottle. It's matter. It's inert or it's unconscious. Right? So that's matter. The Jiva is called the marginal. You see, you have God on this side, Vishnu, and then you have Mahat or matter on that side. And then you got the Jiva in the middle. On the margin. Marginal energy. On the edge. So, the thing that we are given through the mercy of God, the kindness of God, the generosity of God, we are given free will. You choose. You don't like it up here in the spiritual world? No problem. I've got a place for you. Yeah, well, that remind me later about that. So, the Jiva can choose to identify with spirit, or the Jiva can choose to identify with matter. That's your choice. All right? That's why you're marginal. When the Jiva is identified with spirit and knows that it is spiritual or spirit or soul in nature, then it will identify with God. Oh, we're the same substance. I'm not God, but I'm godly, godlike. I'm of the same nature. Ocean, drop of water in the ocean. Drop of ocean water has all the same properties as the ocean. But it's qualitatively the same, but quantitatively different. So you identify with spirit, then you'd be in the spiritual world, because you'd be acting in accordance with the will of God. Divine will, supreme will. You'd be with that program. Then you say, well, you know, I don't like that you're in charge of everything. And everybody's running around worshiping you and serving you and waving your flag and chanting your hymn. I don't really care for that. You know, I'd like me to be at the center. No problem. Let's see how that will work for you. And you go live down here. World of matter. Here you go. Knock yourself out. Work away. So then the jiva becomes covered over by matter. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. You got one too? Earth, water, fire, air, ether. The five elements that constitute material creation. No matter where you go, anywhere in the universe, you will find combinations and permutations of earth, water, fire, air, ether. This planet is in the earthly realm. These are considered to be middle planets, middle realm. Predominantly in the earthly realm, we are made of earth. Yeah, I know we got a lot of water. I'm not denying that. But all bodies are made of earth. Man, thou art dust, and unto dust thou shalt return. Is this not biblical prayer? We are earth. All beings are made of earth here. Yeah, I know there's a lot of water, but earth. Okay. You can go to different planets. There are, according to the Vedic understanding, yoga philosophy, there's on the sun planet, there are all kinds of beings living on the sun planet, including the sun god himself. Guess what their bodies are made out of? Not earth, because they would fry in an instant. What are they made out of? Fire bodies. If you can have an earth body, why can't you have a fire body? Why is that impossible? You could sit there up in the sun planet and go, oh, earth bodies, it's ridiculous. That would never work. They'd, oh, they'd burn up. Not down there, they wouldn't. You know, and then you got these little microscopic beings who are largely water. And look at these little blue bottles, jellyfish. You can see right through them. They're like this faint little thing. And they sting like hell. If you ever got stung by, I got stung by one in Australia. Hurt like hell. I was surrounded by, I had like 10 of them, 12 of them around me. I had to sort of extricate myself. You can see right through them. Mostly water. You can have a body made of anything. Anything's possible.
Your etheric body then would be...
Now, well, then you go to mind, intelligence, and ego, and getting into the subtler levels. So, jiva, Vishnu, mahat, matter. We become covered over, and we forget. What's the biggest thing that happens when you become covered over by matter? You forget. No offense, ladies and gentlemen, you get stupid. You get real stupid. Real fast. You forget what your actual nature is, what your constitutional position is. as spirit. And then you start to worry, and you get upset, and you get bewildered, and you get confused, and you make mistakes, and you get angry. Ever been there? Covered over by matter. So what would be the difference between a jiva, a spirit soul, and God? If there's a difference, what is that difference? God will never be covered over by matter. If you're God, if you say you're God, if you think you're God, then why are you covered over by matter? Explain your last 600 lifetimes to me in detail, please. You should be able to explain, because you should remember all of your lifetimes. Most of us cannot remember what we had for breakfast yesterday morning. We can't remember a phone number that somebody told us an hour ago, unless we program it into the mobile phone. Depends on how cute he is, she says. Then I'll remember. Then it's tattooed to the brain. So, this is covered over by matter or not covered over by matter. So that's what we're dealing with. When we remember our constitutional position as spirit, then our eyes begin to turn once again to God. In the Upanishads, the Katha Upanishad, I've told you this, there's a lovely analogy of two birds sitting in a tree. The tree is the tree of the body. The two birds are the soul, the jiva, and the super soul, God, sitting side by side in the tree of the body. The jiva, whose body it is busy trying to enjoy himself or herself in all so many different ways, lifetime after lifetime, species after species, up the evolutionary ladder, down the evolutionary ladder, any kind of species, up and down, trying to somehow squeeze out some enjoyment. God is so kind and loving as the super soul in the heart that he sits on the tree quietly, says nothing. Lifetime after lifetime, species after species, he goes everywhere with you, everywhere, on waiting for the moment that you go, oh my God, I am so tired of being on this wheel, this hamster wheel of existence. And at long last, you turn, and there he is, waiting for you. He doesn't push you. He doesn't elbow you. He doesn't judge you. He doesn't call you names. He doesn't use guilt. He's not passive aggressive. He waits until you turn and say, when'd you get here? Well, I've been here all along. Really? Yes. Because I love you. And I wouldn't let you go anywhere without me. I'm just waiting for you to recognize that I'm here. How long does that take? How many grains of sand are there on the beach? It takes however long it takes. Should you go home now and punish yourself? and feel regret because you screwed up for how many lifetimes? No. It takes what it takes. That's all. So now, as a jiva, you make a choice. Are you going to continue under the spell of Maya, illusion, thinking you're this body? And this body translates as party time to me. And I'll be on the disco dance floor Saturday night.
Except during the eclipse.
Or will I be meditating during the eclipse? You do what you want to do. I'm not going to judge you for that.
Can I just say one thing?
Yes, you can.
He's
what?
I'm going to
tell you one thing.
She wanted witnesses.
In the meditation this morning, I was in a room with a Vishnu and Lakshmi, and I said to him, I said, most people just talk at you, don't they? He said, yeah.
But she said to Vishnu in her meditation, she said, because she was talking to Lakshmi, her and Lakshmi are very chatty. And she said to Vishnu, you don't seem to talk very much.
Yeah, that's what it was, yeah.
And he said,
most people talk at them, not with them.
Most people talk at me, not to me, not with me. And here's my list. And when can you fulfill this list for me?
True, though. It's all well and good realizing he's there, but then are you going to talk at him or talk with him?
I listen to what he's saying.
Yeah. There's a big difference between us.
This morning in my meditation, I was with Lakshmi, and she said to me, she was sitting on the lake on a lotus flower. Yeah, because she likes to sit in those like that. And she said, now listen. And it was real quiet. Just, now there's a bird here and there, you know, flying, but very, very quiet. And then I could almost hear the musical sound of the universe. like a drone, like a tambora, like this, you know, could hear that, and that would fade in and out. She says, now watch. And Kalindi was with me in the meditation, even though she was doing her own meditation, she was with me in my meditation. And I looked around and Lakshmi stayed stable. Then all of a sudden, just very slightly, our molecules begin to break apart. Like a honeycomb into little hexagonal molecules. We still kept our shape, but we were nothing but little molecules. And it was like a breath, you know? And then we come back together. Solid. And then again. And back together like this. I said, "Wow, that's pretty cool." Because your consciousness was still fixed. You know, that didn't change, and everything around us was like that too, coming apart, coming back together. You know, molecular, solid. Except Lakshmi, she didn't change, and she says. Didn't say much, you just went. I said, wow, what is that? She said, that's Vishnu breathing. That's what happened. Remember we were reading about the creation?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how Vishnu breathes the creation? She says, well, this is it. Same thing, but on a different level. So you're experiencing it as an immediate. This is Vishnu's breathing. She says, you don't realize how dependent we are on God. Completely. Just His breath is, you know, integrating and disintegrating you. Breath by breath. So that's what I'm one I got this morning. I thought that was a good one. So what do you want to lean on? What do you want to depend on? Fianna Fáil? The government? George Bush? You know, your bank account? Your field? Your spouse? Your money? What do you want to depend on? This body? Climb out from under the covering. Throw off the illusion of thinking that you're this body. If you're this body, you're a dead man walking. Or you're a dead woman walking. Because your body is going to die. You know, I watch my body approach decrepitude. It's not something I wanted, but sure enough, it's beginning to unravel. And I don't identify with it too closely. So that's the good part.
But spots come with age.
Of course it comes with age. Of course it comes with age. But there are many people my age or older that are still completely identified with their senses and whatever gratification they can squeeze out of their senses.
Nipping and tucking.
Yeah, and nowadays it's, you know, keep the body young, slice and dice. You know, I'm going to keep myself beautiful, I'm going to get myself vacuumed, hoovered. I'm going to get Botox. I'm going to get a chin, a tummy tuck, an eye. I know all about this because I calculate the days for hundreds of women to have these surgeries.
Oh, no way.
Way. I'll read a little bit of this. This is Mahabharata, as we've talked about many times. This is the story of Krishna and Arjuna, the five Pandava brothers, enlightened beings, and their cousins, the Kauravas. And they were swindled out of their kingdom in a gambling match. They were princes or princes and kings. And they had a gambling match. They challenged each other to a gambling match. And they cheated. The bad guys, the Kauravas, cheated and and had the Pandavas. The head guy, Yudhishthira, was the king. Bet the kingdom and lose at cheating dice. And they lost the kingdom. And part of the whole deal was they were banished to the forest for 14 years without a kingdom. But these were all were raised as princes and kings. So, and that's the story. Even though they knew Krishna, who was an incarnation of Vishnu on earth, was on earth 5,000 years ago. So just as they entered the forest, Yudhishthira's wife Draupadi says, you know, aren't you angry? You know they cheated. Why are you just going to go along with this? Let's go, you know, kick some butt and get our kingdom back. Aren't you mad? I mean, come on. And they shamed me in the assembly. You did nothing. Now, Yudhishthira is known to be the personification of virtue. So I'm just going to read a few of these verses to you. Yudhishthira said, anger is the destroyer of mankind. Anger, prosperity will crown him, O beautiful lady, who destroys his anger. Greatly terrible anger brings on adversity for those who are unable to control it. O fair one, anger in this world is the root of the destruction of mankind. How can one like me indulge in anger, which would bring about the destruction of the world? The angry man commits a sin. The angry man murders his preceptor. The angry man insults his elders with harsh words. The angry man cannot distinguish what should be and what should not be said by him. There's nothing which cannot be said or done by an angry man. There's no limits, in other words. From anger, a man may kill one who should not be killed and worship one that should not be, and adore one that should be slain. An angry man may even dispatch his own self to the abode of death. In other words, suicide. Beholding these evils, anger is conquered by one desirous of excellent well-being, both in this world and the next. So this is what we're getting to here. Why should persons like myself indulge in that anger which has been controlled by persons of tranquil mind? I know the English is a little funny here. Thinking this way, O Draupadi, my wife, my anger is not incited. One that does not act against a person whose anger has been excited will save himself and others from great fear. In fact, he is like a physician to both. When a weak man, when oppressed by others, is angry with those that are more powerful, he brings about his own ruin. There is no region hereafter for such a man who deliberately brings about his own destruction. Therefore, it is said, O Draupadi, that a weak man should always control his anger. And a wise man, too, who, though oppressed, does not allow his anger to be excited, rejoices in the next world for having treated his persecutor with indifference. So to become indifferent. So now he goes on to about forgiving. This is what I really wanted to get to. For this, it is said that a wise man, whether he be strong or weak, should always forgive his persecutor, even if he is in difficulty. The pious will always praise a person who has conquered his anger. It is considered by the pious that the honest and forgiving man is always victorious. Truth is superior to untruth, and gentleness is superior to cruel conduct. Why should I, for the purpose of slaying my cousin, display this anger, which is produces many evil, and which is renounced by the virtuous people? The far-seeing sages regard him as a man of character in whom anger does not exist. The learned men, seeing the real things, always regard him as a man of character who restrains his rising wrath. The angry man does not observe the real state of things. The angry man does not see his way nor regard others. The angry man kills those who should not be killed. He may even slay his preceptor. Therefore, a man of character should always leave anger at a distance. The man that is possessed by anger does not easily acquire generosity, dignity, bravery, skill, and other accomplishments that would be possessed by a real person of character. Renouncing anger, a man can display his true energy, whereas it is very difficult for an angry man to display his energy at the proper hour. If there were not persons among mankind equal to the earth in forgiveness, there would be no peace among them, but perpetual dissension engendered by anger. Equal to the earth in forgiveness. Who does the earth get mad at? Well, she doesn't directly. Every now and then she does, because you will have a natural disaster and a cleansing. But she is generally quite forgiving and quite tolerant. You know. If the injured person were to return their injuries, if one admonished by his superiors, chastised, were to chastise his superiors in return, the result would be the destruction of all creatures. We have that now more and more in our society than we used to.
Can you just say that last question?
If an injured person were to return the injury, strike out, strike back, if one admonished by his superiors would admonish them in return. In America, in the school system, this is very common now. Teacher says something to the student tells the teacher to F off. Worst case scenario, they beat the teacher. Punch them, smack them, kick them. That's the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. That will unravel everything. If that becomes endemic, you're finished. If fathers, if the chastised man chastises in return, if fathers kill their sons and sons their fathers, if husbands destroy their wives and wives their husbands, then how can births take place in this world where anger so predominates? Know you, O fair damsel, that the birth of creatures in this world is dependent upon peace. If kings yield to anger, O Draupadi, their subjects soon meet with ruin. We're watching the biography, dramatized biography of Saddam Hussein, House of Saddam. Mm. And he got the existing president of the country to step down. They told him he had to. Saddam took over. Almost immediately he went to war with Iran. And they had, I think, a seven-year war with Iran. It was a stalemate. No land was gained. Nothing was gained. There was no conclusive victory. And at the end of the 7 years, they stopped fighting and he declared victory. We won. We won. What did you win? Let's see it. You know. And then shortly thereafter, he invaded Kuwait. Right? So this is an example of a king who, out of anger, in his case, kind of madness, just starts invading everybody, and sooner or later, the whole country becomes undone. Well, isn't that what happened? It's exactly what happened. You know, whether you agree with the U.S. invading or not, it doesn't matter. The whole thing came undone. That's the point. Thus, anger brings on destruction and distress of mankind. Because persons who are forgiving like the earth exist in this world, it is therefore that creatures are born and enjoy prosperity. So without balanced, forgiving, kind persons, civilization cannot continue. That's what he's saying here. O fair damsel, in every form of injury, persons should forgive. It is said that the birth of creatures is due to the forgiveness of mankind. He is considered as an excellent and learned person who, having conquered his anger, always shows forgiveness, even when insulted, oppressed, or challenged by a strong man. Eternal regions are for that person. Eternal regions means heavenly realms. Who, though powerful, conquers his anger, while he that is angry becomes foolish and meets with ruin, both in this world and in the next. Okay, so I want to read that to you. So, moral of the story: overcome your anger.
His position as a leader to not to be taken lightly.
Well, you see, here's the thing. This goes on and on. This is a conversation because his wife and then his brothers confront him and say, "Wait a second, that's all very nice for if you're a priest or a Brahmin or a sage or a yogi, then you forgive everybody. But if you're a king, you can't forgive everybody. You have to sometimes take steps. And you have to take steps to protect your kingdom, your family, your subjects, your people. You have to." So that's what the argument is here. And he's leaning a little too much toward forgiveness in a situation, strictly speaking, for people who should not be forgiven. So what happens in reality is they spend 14 years in the forest because he's the oldest brother and he was effectively the king. And he says, "That's what we're going to do." That's what they did. And at the end of the 14 years, they came back and they tried to negotiate. They said, "Well, give us our kingdom back." "No, there's no way in the world we'll give you your kingdom. You're dreaming." "What kingdom? You've been gone for 14 years. You kidding me?" "Okay, well, we're kings. We're princes, so give us 5 villages. There's 5 of us. Each of us gets a village we can rule over. Because that's what we do. That's our nature." "Not going to give you 1 village. Never mind 5 villages. So no matter what they did diplomatically, it didn't work. So that forced the hand, and once the hand is forced, then...
What are the steps before it was negotiations and then talk?
Yeah, there's four steps. Yeah, political steps that one takes. Sama, Dana, Beda, and Danda, according to yoga philosophy, political philosophy. Sama is conciliation, the bargaining table, diplomacy, tact. If somebody's a really good conciliator or arbitrator or negotiator, the problem gets solved. "Come on, let's sit down, talk. Ireland, you go to the bar and have a pint. You talk. You come out having agreed." Another thing that's very common in this country is a lot of disputes get solved literally on the courtroom steps. I don't think it's just this country. Negotiation takes place just before they go into trial and they reach an agreement, and that's conciliation, bargaining. If conciliation does not work, then one goes to, that is sama, then one goes to dana. Dana means gifts. Gifts and favors. What do you need? What do you want? "Well, I need this. I need that." "Okay. I'll do this for you. You do this for me." So you're going to...
How is that different from the bargaining table?
Because the bargaining table is, you don't necessarily give a gift. You just come to an agreement. You don't necessarily have to give something. But if you're trying to make an agreement with somebody, no matter what you try to do, it doesn't work. Then you offer them something. It's like a good example might be your children when they're little. You try to get them to do something. It doesn't work, no matter how hard you try. And you say, okay, you want to go over to your friend's house tomorrow. You want me to take you over there? He's got a swimming pool. He invited you over. So if you want to go swim tomorrow at your friend's house, then you got to go to bed now. If you don't go to bed now, that's fine, but I won't take you over tomorrow. That's Donna. If something is, you get something out of it. That's the second one. Samadana Beda. Beda means division or dissension. So you create dissension. You create a rebellion. Or you create dissension within the enemy's camp. You turn his people against him. That's Beda. Any examples? Yeah, that would be a method. In politics, what they do is they put on a rumor. They either dig up dirt on somebody and find dirt and then make that public, or they make up a rumor. And sometimes a rumor itself, even though it's not true, can destroy people. Right? And they say, oh, well, now we found it wasn't true, so forget it. It's too late. It's too late. Everybody's associating this guy with that. They just discovered John Edwards was having an affair. John Edwards was running for the Democratic nomination. And he was in the campaign for a long time. And he got a bunch of votes to become the Democratic candidate. And now he stepped down at some stage. But he still has a bunch of delegates that are his delegates that he can turn over to whoever he wants. Then he endorsed Obama at some stage. So that means all the delegates he has will go to Obama when they have their convention. Mm-hmm. So here we are 1 week before the convention, and it turns out that John Edwards had this affair. During the time when his wife, they came out publicly, his wife had breast cancer. And then it's all true. Yeah. Then the breast cancer went away, and then her cancer came back, and she says, I don't want my husband to leave the campaign. He's going to fight on. Now I'm going to fight my breast cancer. And in the meantime, this guy was having an affair with the woman who was shooting his video. So all of this just came out just literally a couple of days ago. Yeah. So
has he denied it?
No, he doesn't deny it. No, he doesn't deny it. And now the woman's pregnant, so she's pregnant. So he's denying that it's his baby, so guess what's going to happen there? It's called DNA. So that's the next road they're going to go down, but
he left early. He left the campaign early.
Fairly early, yeah.
Was that maybe because he knew that this would get to him?
Yeah. Well, according, I was looking at a news story. American channel today, and they said on Fox, they said, we knew the story, for a year. And we didn't reveal it. We sat on it because in deference to his family and his wife going through breast cancer. And why would she need that? And secondarily, at the time, he was not holding political office. He was running for office. He was not holding office. So there's no need for people to know this necessarily. Now, if he would have become the Democratic nominee, for sure this would have come out. But now it's the cat's out of the bag. So that's Beta. When you foment rebellion or upheaval. Yeah. Or you say something to. You're having trouble with your superior. So you go to your superior's superior and you say, did you know that this is what this person's stealing money out of the till? Even if they're not. And they could easily lose their job. I mean, I've heard these stories all the time from clients of mine. you know, people just trump up charges and then they're gone. That's beta. Danda means the stick. Danda literally means stick, means punishment. So when all of these other methods fail to get you what you're trying to, all these means to an end, then out comes the stick. And you beat somebody over the head. That, again, may or may not work. And if they take the stick away from you and beat you over the head, because in war, the victor is never certain. Never. But as I mentioned recently, when I was 14 years old in Jesuit school, and I was creating disturbance in class, and I went to the vice principal's office, Father McArdle, and he brought out the strap, and he let me have a few of those. I became a judicious child very quickly. Worked a treat. So those are the four means. The best thing, if you're really good at it, you do Sama. You just come to an agreement. Because anything beyond that, even at that stage, you could be hiring attorneys. You could be hiring attorneys all through that. All right, so we have a mantra. We thought we would do for the meditation. Use the yantra, and I'm going to get out of your way. We're going to use this Vishnu yantra, which is on your left. Yeah, the one on the left is Vishnu, God in the male form. The one on the right is Shri or Lakshmi in the female form. So we'll just do the Vishnu one now. I thought we'd just give you the mantra and we'll all do the same one. A yantra, when you say a mantra, mantra is a sound vibration. A mantra on another dimension has a geometric form, which you can't see, but you could see if you can see. And this is the geometric form. It's not a two-dimensional form as depicted on this canvas. It is a three-dimensional or more multi-dimensional form. One way to look at this is you're looking at it from the top of the yantra, looking down on it. So if you were looking at it from the side, it would be this shape, like a mountain or a pyramid. Yeah. The word yantra means machine. When you focus at the center, always at the center of the yantra, that dot is called the bindu, central point. So when we start to meditate on it, that's what you focus on, that dot. And just stay focused and don't be looking here and there and squirming and stuff like that. Focused on the bindu. And as you hold the focus, you can chant this mantra that we've given you, Om Namo Vishnave. 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 Okay? You can do that quietly or you can do it silently, as you like. And as you hold your concentration, this will begin to Well, it won't. Well, it might. It might do all those things. It will begin to pulsate, reverberate. It'll begin to move. That's what it'll begin to do. And then the machine is thrown into motion. Okay. And this is a very powerful. Now, it can take you in two directions. It can take you into it, or it can bring you out. It can implode or explode.
Yeah.
I didn't mean the plode part, but there's another. Anyway, that's the idea. You know, it can
infold, unfold.
So yeah, it can infold or unfold.
There's nothing it can't do.
There's nothing it can't do.
You're
limiting
looking
it.
For something. You're looking for something.
You're looking for whatever it is it does for you. Right? That's what you're looking for. Just Om Namo Vishnave. Om Namo Vishnave. You don't have to say it out loud, but Om Namo Vishnave. Okay, get out of your way. Well, how'd you do? I found this angle to be a little difficult. I'm getting sort of.
It's interesting doing it without chanting it audibly, you know, doing it in your head. I wonder if it's
better, not as good.
Maybe so. Yeah.
Well, it's whatever it is for you.
Mm.
You know, when you chant,
the energies combined must make a difference. Is that
well? When you chant out loud, you're engaging your ears and your tongue. Mm. Whereas you're not engaging your ears and your tongue, the way we just did it.
I would say if you just keep focused, it's quiet.
Well, for some people, yeah. For others, no.
I find it quite hard. Any time I thought I could definitely see the dimensions changing.
Yeah.
But any time I felt I was going deeper, my eyes started to fill with water.
Me too. Yeah, that's what happened to me. To the point where I bawled my eyes out.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't think it was an emotional thing. I thought it was actually a visual thing. That it was just, it was stopping me.
It might help you just to close your eyes partially. And then see it, you know, see it kind of in that sort of blur. Sometimes you
but
can.
Then
do.
Just at the end, I closed my eyes and I had a full visual of it.
Yeah, you could see it because it.
Imagination,
right.
Actually, the colors were there.
Yeah, because you stared at it for so long.
I might become the Bindi, as you had said in the beginning, by it. If I could have stayed there a little bit longer, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was really interesting because it wasn't like I was trying to picture that in my head. It was there, you know, like when you were writing for it.
Yeah.
All those colors are there, so. So it was kind of interesting, the shapes and everything. Yeah, but I wonder what that is when your eyes start to fill with water. Is that you stopping yourself from going beyond, or?
At the beginning, I noticed that I could only hold that for, you know, when you see it starting to change and your eyes start to water, it only lasts for a second or two and then you go back to normal again.
Yeah,
you
and then
you teach yourself to hold that for a bit longer and then it really starts to take off. That's what I started to do.
It's like
training and practice.
You have to train yourself to actually see what's happening.
Yeah, it pulsates.
Yeah, it was like
it's like it's breathing.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah, that's what it does. That's when that you see
you
fired up the machine. Yeah. That's
who painted this?
Mary Reynolds.
Where did you get them? They're amazing. They're beautiful.
Like who came up with the whole thing?
Oh well,
ancient,
this is ancient,
right?
Yeah.
Ancient. I'll go online in a minute.
It's thousands of years old.
Somebody really painted this tree one.
We asked for her to paint it.
Yeah, it's a whole science.
We
the distance between from this to this and this from this is all like Fibonacci. You know, it has to be an exact
proportions.
You got an artist to paint it, that's what you
mean. Yeah.
Yeah,
we got an artist to paint it who paints yantras.
Right, okay.
We saw a painting of hers, and she's very good at executing. I mean, not anybody could paint something like this because it has to be very exact and proportional. And you'd have to have more of an architectural type of approach.
Even the colors, and like, what colors did she use? Like,
she chose the colors.
What's the material? The medium?
Oil.
Oil, is it? You need to get it to that.
And the gold is actual gold leaf.
Amazing, yeah. Why would you guys pick the colors? Sorry.
She picked the colors, and we told her we wanted some earthy tones.
Mm-hmm.
And then she did a sketch. Mm-hmm. Showed us the sketch, and we approved the sketch.
Yeah.
We didn't change anything, though, in the sketch.
Right.
Which we would have, but we didn't.
And she was saying that when she painted it, the colors would change by themselves. She put it on the canvas, which has never happened before. And the colors would change.
Hmm.
She'd paint one thing and something else would turn up.
Really?
So she just let it manifest itself.
When she finished the painting and she delivered it to us, which was about a week or so ago, she then spent the next week in bed with vertigo.
Yeah.
She couldn't, her balance was gone.
She developed that before?
Well, I'm not sure. It took her about 6 weeks.
Oh, she did well.
2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's the difference between the Vishnu yantra and this one?
The Vishnu is God, and God's and this is God's energy.
Okay, this, so what's that yantra mean?
This is the Shri yantra.
Shri. That
would
be Lakshmi.
Yeah, so here's Lakshmi and Vishnu right above Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
And to your right is Lakshmi.
Mm-hmm.
And to your left is Vishnu.
Mm-hmm. Crop circles of these turn up around the world all the time.
Right. Yeah.
There was a huge big one of these, up and up online, of the Shri one in Oregon on an old dry lake, a little bit, like a couple of miles long in each direction. And if some Air Force pilot was flying over, and it was etched into the ground.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you think it turns up because of people chanting that in parts of the world?
I don't know.
I don't know who lived around the dry riverbed.
Mm. I don't know.
Sometimes, too, grasses look very like that when they... You know the way we get these? Like, we used to get them around where a statue was before. They'd appear from nowhere, these circles. And you'd see them on the hills and coming down the trees. It's really weird, but they were very like the Vishnu one.
Mm.
Mm, amazing.
What's the other one? I didn't catch that.
This is Shri. This is Lakshmi. The other one's Vishnu. And every mantra has a machine form of it.
Every mantra.
Everything. Mm. It's like, you know, when you speak to water, the water changes.
Yeah,
the mantra.
Yeah, of course.
Well, That's the idea.
Yeah, and you know that images in water by the Japanese guy?
Yeah.
I remember
you see those geometrical images?
Mm.
Same idea, yeah?
So when you say that you let her pick the colors, there aren't just standard traditional colors that these would be done in?
No, it's the shapes. Colors, you can have it all done in crystal.
Wow.
Or all in diamond, or all in emerald, anything.
Diamond.
You see? So the colors have nothing to do with it, really. It's the shapes. It's all about the shapes. It's all about the geometry.
We've spoken to her, and she's going to do a whole set of smaller versions.
Smaller yantras.
Yes, so you can put them in your home.
Mm-hmm.
As
soon as she recovers.
Yeah, of course.
She's recovered. She recovered. I got an email from her saying she's okay. Now.
I felt bad.
I didn't.
So bad you ordered
it. I did.
I didn't know she was going to be sick enough.
Yeah, that's, you know. Well, we don't know if she got vertigo from working on it. We just know that at the end of this project, she got vertigo for a week and had to stay in bed. So, you know, this is very powerful energy to be staring at.
Yeah.
Up close. You know, we're not just... You stared at it for 5 minutes.
I'm ahead of going.
And she was like this.
Yeah.
You know.
Standing back and looking at it and going back in again. Yeah. That size, that scale as well.
Hey, look, she got paid to meditate. That's how I see it. It cannot be a bad thing.
And the minute it came into the house, within an hour, a good few amazing things happened. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, just bringing the energy into the house.
Like, gosh, the dishes washed themselves.
No,
that's your house, my dear. That's not our house.
Just, you know, big things slipped into place.
Big positive things.
Yeah, big positive things. Yeah.
The birds flew in and they did the counter. And then the deer came in and did the dishes. And they all sang Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo.
Bambi, you
What's interesting is putting the chant word in your head, because I think the visual is there anyway. If you just decided to silently meditate, you would definitely come away with something. But adding the chant to it, it's almost a cinema experience. I thought it's exactly what you were saying. You get this visual thing occupying you, and short of eating popcorn, you're also getting the you know, you're kind of sitting back and it's all coming to you. So this chant is your soundtrack, if you want, or your sound and picture thing.
Next time we'll provide the popcorn.
Okay. it's interesting, yeah. It's just the chant, it's so different than if we were doing a regular mantra without that there. It really focuses you in a different way. The chant becomes kind of, it's funny how sound and color go together, isn't it? This exploding color and then this sound that you have in your head. Very interesting way of doing it.
And as soon as I stopped, it just went suddenly back into
where it should be.
You know,
normal.
Two-dimensional.
So do you think it can help to absorb the vibration of any house then by having
it? Oh, yeah, absolutely. See, for Vastu, which is Vedic feng shui, at the origin of feng shui, putting yantras in your home is ways of undoing weak or negative energy or negative spaces. The yantras will energize and neutralize any negative spaces in your home. And each direction or each quadrant represents something according, but it's in Vastu, it's all oriented to the cardinal directions. It's not randomly done.
So because every direction would have certain ones that you could put in, or does it depend on where they are as to what you put in?
Yeah, but you see the Shri one, this one is considered the one that could neutralize anything.
Right.
It doesn't really matter. Ideally, the divine or godly, spiritual, and divinely energetic place in any structure is the northeast. And all the most auspicious or spiritual energies come in to the northeast. So that's where you'd want to have an altar, or holy pictures, or a shrine.
In the northeast?
Always the northeast. Most important. Because the north and the east are the most auspicious directions. So, northeast, it represents God.
Is that a matter of interest? Is that the same in the other traditions, say, like in feng shui?
Some feng shui traditions will recognize that, and others don't. Others orient the bagua from your front door, no matter where your front door is. Which direction, as you walk in your front door, they put the 8 portions of the bagua oriented to the front door. But that has nothing to do with the natural magnetic currents of the earth. It ignores all that. Whereas Vastu doesn't. So, if Kalindi gets off the phone, I'll get this book. There's a book called Vastu, The Origin of Feng Shui.
The magnetic currents, do you mean ley lines by that?
Well, that's part of it.
Yeah.
Would you get See? This book is Vastu, the Origin of Feng Shui by Dr. Marcus Shmika. Okay? This is an excellent book on Vedic science of architecture, design, and spatial harmony. This guy was on my radio show as a guest a week ago. And I talked to him today for about an hour. He's going to come here to Ireland.
I missed that. Sorry, who's coming?
No. The guy who wrote this book.
When you said here, I'm sorry. Here.
Yeah, here.
Here.
Oh, here.
Yeah. Right here. Yeah.
Oh, God.
So what we're trying... Well, he's going to come if we can organize enough consultations for him to make it worth his while to come. Tentatively, he's going to give a talk on September 4th. It's a Thursday evening. So we're going to find a venue for him to give a talk, depending how many people sign up. There's a sign-up sheet out in the kitchen. There's no charge for the talk, but he wants to do some consultations while he's here. His consultation is 4 hours. It costs 800 euro to go to your house and tell you what needs to be adjusted. This guy is a PhD in physics. Vastu, he knows Vedic astrology. He's on the board of several universities. He's got his own academy in Berlin. And he's a very gentle soul, spiritual guy. So he's agreed to come. We just have to line up a few, you know, paying people who want to have their houses.
What Jan suggested as well is that we just have a small fee for people to come to the talk, so that might cover.
Yeah, I don't know that that's going to do it. You know, yeah, that.
I'm
you know.
Just what's the talk again?
September 4th is what we're looking at tentatively. His wife was due to have a baby today. Or soon. And I said, oh, today. He says, yeah, the baby's waiting to choose the proper muhurta, which is the right time to come out of the womb. So anyway, assuming we can get some people to have some analysis done, then.
So he's German?
Yeah. Jawohl. His English is excellent.
And
easy to understand.
He was explaining to you today there's
three... There's three levels at which feng shui... Vastu is done. The geometric, the energetic, and the karmic level. So different Vastu experts would be expert in one of the levels, not always all. There are two, according to Vedic literature, because all this comes from the Vedas, it's all part of the Vedas, as is Vedic astrology, as is Ayurveda, as is most of what we talk about here. There is, among the demons, there was a very famous architect known as Maya Danava. Danava means demon. And in the hellish worlds or demoniac worlds, the lower worlds in this universe, there are some fabulous places. Fabulous cities.
That's where you get the Mayan culture from.
Well, hang on, you're a step ahead now. And it's not that they don't have great things. They do have great things there. But it's like these are people who have a hidden agenda, whose motivations are mixed. Let's put it that way. But they still had some fabulous buildings and cities. So that architect, Maya Dhanava, has a specific Vastu tradition, which is still used today in India. And from that tradition comes Mayan pyramids in Mayan civilization in Central and South America.
They follow the principles.
They follow the same principles. Okay. There is another person who was Vishvakarma, who was not a demon, but a godly being from the higher planets, who would build the palaces, temples, and cities for the gods and enlightened beings in the universe. And he has a whole tradition of Vastu. Both of these traditions are extant now in India and are taught. So there, this explosion of Vastu and this knowledge is now really coming out. Just like Ayurveda had its moment and it came out. Then Vedic astrology had its moment and it came out. Before Ayurveda, before Vedic astrology, yoga had its moment and it came out. So you got yoga, you've got Ayurveda, you got Vedic astrology. Now Vastu is coming. It's Vastu's turn. And the Vedic stuff is always amazing. Amazing. So we're trying to get one of the guys here for you. So you can be addressed. If you want to, who knows, it might change your life. You might want to go and study and become a Vastu consultant. I don't know. Or you might reorient your home and all of a sudden become fabulously successful.
But the when I was a kid, the first time I came across being in the casino business, there was a manufacturer that would make slot machines, and their business was almost bankrupt. So they brought in the Quasi-Ved practitioner, a Vastu guy, and they built a new factory following these principles, and they're the biggest manufacturer in the world now, just by having their plant follow these principles. It changed the whole business around.
You see? Remember the house we lived in up in Kilternan? Mm-hmm. The field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the view. The shape of that plot was like this. Kind of like the front of a house, you know, roof, sides, bottom. Do you understand what I mean? So essentially, that's a triangle with kind of with sides on it, right? So Phil, the stonemason and sculptor who owned the house, some of you may have met Phil, I don't know.
It's a triangle on a square. Which
correct.
Is triangle.
Yeah, but for a Vastu plot, you never want to have a triangle-shaped plot. You'll be in the courts and you'll be in conflict and disagreements and problems if the plot is shaped like a triangle, right? So, of course, Phil didn't know that. How would he? So he applied for planning permission to build a house on that property. 25 years went by. No planning permission. You know what it's like here. So then what he did was he erected a fence across this part of the property, okay, which turned all the way across. So that turned the bottom part into almost a perfect square. There's the fence. And the top part into a triangle. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
The plan was to build the house within that square, right? He erected the fence. It was what do you call it, studs.
Small posts.
And some wire. 2 weeks later, planning permission. Planning permission. Because it shifted the energy. The shape shifted the energy. Now, you know how planning permission works. You've got X amount of time to get a house built, or they'll revoke the planning permission. So the money that was available to build the house 25 years ago was not available to build it. But so he scrambled around and got some money and built the house. So that's how it works. This plot here is a triangle. If you've been in our back garden, you will see a simple fence of wooden sticks with a piece of rope, blue rope, going through the studs all the way across from there, all the way up the top of that hill to the neighbor's property, which has made this part here a square, where the house sits. And on the other side of that little fence is the triangle, where we don't live. We live.
Yeah, the horse doesn't like
the
messy.
The horse, yeah, none of the horse can. So here it is in the square. And as soon as we put up that fence, I said to her, I kept saying to her, I'm not going to wait. We have to get this fence up. We have to go to Woody's, buy some stakes, get some rope. It's the simplest fence imaginable. Immediately the energy shifted. You could feel it.
There's the fires up in Malibu and in California, and you'd have far more of these Boston Putty Bay houses. And the fires outside each house, they usually put some sort of little picket fence or a little roped area, which is perfectly square around the house.
Perfectly square around the house. That's
the
all you have to do.
Up to all of these houses to the little rope. Burnt everything else and left only the Boston houses, and everything else was rented.
Wow.
There's another friend of ours, and he was a town planner, and he built himself a little Boston house. They're pretty modest. And then within, I don't know, a few months, he left that job, was poached by a developer, and his first deal made him $18 million.
Developer said, oh, you don't work for the county council anymore. No. But you know everything there is to know about getting planning permission, don't you? Of course I do. You're my new partner. Your first deal will be worth $18 million. Are you in? This is him and his Vastu house. When do you know a planning commissioner making that kind of money? The guy's now a multimillionaire, you know.
But he won't move out of his little house. He's got a little house. Isn't it?
And he's got a little simple fence. So if you've got a house on a property, I mean, if you've got some space on your property and you're not sure about it, and you put yourself a nice little fence around that, it makes it a square or a rectangle.
Oh, rectangle's okay.
Rectangle's okay. Square or rectangle. Anything else?
So if you've got a rectangle, which is the back garden, the front garden, and the house in the middle, then that's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah. Okay. So we're hoping to get him here.
Spread the word.
Spread the word.
Yeah.
And if you know of anybody that would really seriously want, this guy's an expert. Mm-hmm. He's done thousands of buildings. But, I mean, 800 euros is 800 euros, and not everybody's got 800 euros.
When you say 4 hours, like, would that cover, you know, like, say, someone's in an apartment or a house or whatever?
Yeah, whatever.
And then he'll...
Well, no, he would adjust it accordingly.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, essentially, it's 200 an hour.
Right.
And he said for a regular house, it takes about 4 hours.
That's what he said. For a regular, if you get an apartment, a small house, it would take less time. It would cost less money.
Yeah, well.
So the main thing is we got to give this guy 2 or 3 days where he's making real money, so that we can get him here to speak to us and learn some stuff. We should be able to do that. All right. Thank you. Om Tat Sat.
Hare Krishna.
May Vastu be with you.